Interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Listeners, this is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255. 458-TALK, what is on your mind about firearms today? It's another great day in Fairbanks. The sun's shining and the temperature is 55 degrees downtown this morning. And Melissa is in the studio with me. She's keeping the Shooter's Corner archives up to date for us. So if you miss a program, it should be accessible within a day or so. And Melissa, I very much appreciate that. So what is on our agenda today? A brief and buggy comment about today's holiday, then grab your coach guns and ride shotgun for history. I want to talk about House Bill 203 on safe gun storage. And in relation to that, I want to talk about information from Guy Smith's books, Guns and Control, again, about whether the availability of firearms affects suicide rates. And I'll get into the red flag laws if we have time. If not, I'll finish up in 2 weeks because here's a couple of announcements. Next week, May 27, Glenn Miller will be back on with us to host his Glenn Miller's Reloading Bench program on Shooter's Corner. And Glenn has been traveling on the East Coast shooting matches. I've talked with Glenn, and I know he has interesting information to share from his travels, as well as important reloading topics. So get your questions ready for Glenn Miller next week on Shooter's Corner. And there's more. The president of the Alaska Machine Gun Association group here in Fairbanks will be on Shooter's Corner June 17 to talk about his organization and a number of other machine gun topics. And of course, he will answer questions that you have. So mark your calendar for June 17 to learn more about the Alaska Machine Gun Association and fully automatic firearms, suppressors, and more. Now, I want to let you know that the Alaska Machine Gun Association will be holding their annual Memorial Day weekend shoot on June 5th and 6th in Anderson. Now, normally the event is on Memorial Day weekend, but it had to be postponed to a week later this year. So that is June 5th and 6th at the Anderson Riverside Park. And if you are looking for something fun and firearms related to do with your family, it might be a beautiful drive down to Anderson to watch the Machine Gunners. Competition is going to be on the 5th, and then starting at 10 a.m. on the 6th, there will be an open shoot. And I hear that they are a friendly group. Maybe one or two will let you try one of their guns. For more information about exact times, the location, and specific events, please write to this email, honcho, that's H-O-N-C-H-O, honcho at amga.net. AMGA is the Alaska Machine Gun Association. So honcho at amga.net. And you can also check the Alaska Machine Gun Association Facebook page. Now, we have a buggy holiday today. Today, May 20th, is World Bee Day. And World Bee Day is a big deal because on December 20, 2017, every single United Nations country adopted a resolution in support of World Bee Day. And that's amazing to me because UN countries cannot agree on much these days, but they were all in support of World Bee Day. Now, World Bee Day is celebrated in the month of May because in the Northern Hemisphere, the bees are most active in reproducing and then gathering their pollen. And in the Southern Hemisphere in May, the bees have finished their work and it's time to harvest the bee products. And it's not just any date in May that was chosen. It was specifically May 20th because it is the birthday of an Anton, and it's J-A-N-S-A Jansa, who lived from 1734 to 1734. Okay, who was born in 1734. I obviously don't know exactly when he died, who was a pioneer of modern beekeeping techniques. Now, bees are important for many reasons. The biggest one is that bees are one of our main pollinators. And the big question I have today is this: what guns do bees shoot? Okay, I didn't hear anybody answer. Bees shoot BB guns. And so do I. I've been shooting my Sig Sauer P365 BB air gun. And I have lots to tell you about what fun I'm having with that Sig P365 BB gun during this ammunition shortage. So that is a story from another program. For sure, bees would not shoot the Springfield Hellcat with that hex wasp red dot on it because wasps eat bees for lunch. Moving on, grab your coach guns. William George Fargo was born in Pompeii, New York, this day in 1818, the eldest of 12 children. And he did not have much of a formal education. He had to go to work to support his family. He left his country school at age 13 to become a mail carrier in Pompeii. And he delivered mail by horse. His family was poor, but from what we know of the men in the Fargo family, they were men of service. George Fargo's grandfather served with distinction in the American Revolutionary War. His father fought and was wounded in the War of 1812. Now, I won't spend too long on this today. I hope to spend a few programs this summer on the great men who guarded Wells Fargo shipments. I ordered a book titled The Brave Men Who Rode for Wells Fargo in the Wild West, and I can't wait to read it and share the stories in it with all of you. But back to William Fargo. He made choices that moved him closer to his destiny, and that destiny was Wells Fargo, American Express, the Pony Express, and great wealth. Fargo continued to deliver mail in his village until the winter of 1838, and then at about age 20, he started working for one grocery business and then another. In 1841, he became a freight agent for the Auburn and Santa Cruz Railroad. He then left the railroad job and joined Livingston, Wells & Co. as a messenger. And skipping forward in time so I can get to the firearms part of this faster, Wells Fargo & Company was created to help facilitate business along the way from New York to San Francisco. But his first method of transport was by ship, and then crossing the Isthmus of Panama overland, and then moving by ship again up the Pacific coast. And soon Wells Fargo & Company bought out Overland Mail Company, which had originally been formed in 1857 to carry United States mail. And Wells Fargo & Company eventually handled mail, freight, money by train, coach, and Pony Express. Wells Fargo didn't own all the coaches. They sometimes contracted out to other companies who ran coach businesses to transport people, goods, money, and gold. And it was all dangerous. Lots of outlaws wanted the money and gold. And this brings us to firearms. I'm sure most of our listeners have heard the term riding shotgun. The terms cut-down shotgun or messenger's gun were coined sometime in the 1860s. A few years before that, the term coach gun was used when Wells Fargo & Company ran a regular stagecoach service from Missouri to San Francisco. Now, those routes were considered some of the most lawless in our nation at the time. Remember, those Wells Fargo coaches were carrying the U.S. mail on contract, and they were also transporting gold shipments and currency. How dangerous was it for the men driving the coaches? I read that between 1870 and 1884, 347 robbery attempts were targeted at Wells Fargo stagecoaches. That averages about 2 attempts per month. It took a strong-minded person to drive or guard those coaches. And some of our famous historic lawmen took a turn. That included Wyatt Earp, Morgan Earp, Wild Bill Hickok, and William Frederick Buffalo Bill Cody. Let's go to a break now, and I'll finish up around the corner. We'll be right back.
Except for us Alaskans, there's gardens to grow, fish to catch, building projects, adventures, and preparing for next winter. Auto Trim Design can help you with Arctic Spray-On bed liners to protect your bed, mud flaps, floor mats, car stereo, running boards, clear toppers, paint protection film, and much more. Get your auto start installed today to beat the fall rush and watch our sign for weekly specials. Auto Trim Design, as Bob says,
we'll be here when the other guys are gone.
Ramping up for your spring and summer is easy at Frontier Outfitters. They have a great selection of the right gear for camping to fishing, optics to clothing, GPS, and much more. Frontier has you covered. Is your list a little longer than that? Sentry Hardware is located right downstairs for ATV, marine, and auto accessories. Sentry carries the best selection of nuts, bolts, screws, washers, and fasteners around. Metric and American in brass, stainless, and chrome. Be sure to check Sentry first. Sentry Hardware and Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
KFAR weather.
A blend of clouds and sun today with daytime highs approaching 68. Southeast winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Lows dip down to about 45. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 63. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Currently, it's 58 degrees.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255, 458-TALK, and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. So we were talking about Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo and Company assigned shotgun managers whose job it was to guard the shipments on the stagecoaches. And the term coach gun is not a specific make or model. It was usually a 10-gauge or 12-gauge break action. No one company stands out as a supplier, but the coach gun usually had a barrel length of 12 to 20 inches. To compare, shotguns for birds for bird hunting at that time had barrels of 28 to 36 inches. Now, if these longer barreled shotguns were purchased, the barrels were shortened to that 12 to 20 inch length, either by at the factory or by gunsmiths or by the owner of the gun. And from an article titled Wells Fargo and the Pony Express by Joe Zentner, I learned that the term coach gun, quote, refers to a generic class of compact side-by-side double-barreled shotguns featuring barrels that allowed easy handling in the cramped driver's box. Most were equipped with external hammers called rabbit ears. The guns were ideal for the job at hand, unquote. And another quote from that article, although repeating rifles held more rounds and had a greater range, only in the movies does a person score consistent hits on a moving target from a bouncing box of a fleeing stagecoach. The multiple shot charge from a shotgun was far more likely to score, making the weapon the first choice of savvy stage guards. The sturdy double barrels were virtually indestructible, even when heavily fouled, would fire long as the shells could be rammed into the chambers. A quick wipe of the breeches with a shirt tail often put a fouled shotgun right back into action, unquote. Now, it's part of our history, and we should know, that with the California Gold Rush, tens of thousands of people headed west. And all those people and all that new wealth created a tremendous transcontinental trade of goods and banking. And the term riding shotgun wasn't coined until about 1919, when the shotgun messengers began to guard express shipments, not the stagecoaches. And I've read conflicting articles about the source of the shotguns. I read that Wells Fargo and Company did not commission or inventory the shotguns provided to their drivers. Those articles say that the shotguns were procured by local Wells Fargo agents and distributed to their drivers and guards. But other articles say that prior to 1900, these shotguns were purchased from San Francisco gun dealers because Wells Fargo's headquarters was located there. And I read that from 1908 to 1918, all Wells Fargo shotguns were manufactured by Ithaca. Prior to that, the shotguns were manufactured by a number of different companies, including Remington Arms, Ithaca, Colt Manufacturing Company, Parker, Elsie Smith, and several Belgian gun makers. That said, at least some of the shotguns that were purchased for the Wells Fargo shotgun messengers by Wells Fargo were marked with Wells Fargo on them. It was stamped on them. And this situation makes it difficult to authenticate a real vintage Wells Fargo Coach gun from a counterfeit one on the collector's market. So if you wish you were born in a different era and long to be a shotgun messenger, you can still buy a Coach gun. They are popular for cowboy shooting, for cowboy action shooting, and are even used for home defense. Now, Stoeger sells a modern side-by-side Coach gun for $400 to $500, depending where you purchase it. The information on the Sportsman's Warehouse website reads, quote, Stoeger Coach Gun Side-by-Side Shotgun. Coach Gun single and double trigger shotguns are based on the Old West Stagecoach Guard's shotgun of choice. The handsome and affordable single and double trigger scatter guns pack a potent punch. All of these Coach Guns are ideal for cowboy action shooting and home defense, unquote. Now, William George Fargo died a wealthy, very wealthy man in 1881 at the young age of 63. And his companies and his efforts were important, supporting Americans moving west and fostering the commerce that created wealth. Without those brave shotgun messengers, vigilant with their Coach guns, our country's history may have been written differently. So let me move on here to something I think is important. Last week in the May 12th edition of the Newsminer, we talked about it briefly last week, there was an article titled Fairbanks Lawmaker Submits Bill to Require Safe Storage of Guns. And a lady called in last week to discuss this bill, and so it did come up. I want to spend more time on it today and get listener opinions. The bill is House Bill 203, and it was introduced by Representative Adam Wohl, a Democrat, with co-sponsors Representative Steve Thompson, who is Republican, and Representative Andy Josephson, who is a Democrat. Now, we all know Adam Wohl and Steve Thompson reside in the Fairbanks area. Andy Josephson resides in Wasilla. The Newsminer article reads, quote, House Bill 203 would require gun owners to safely secure firearms to avoid accidents and injuries. Gun owners would need to have firearms locked and or secured in a locked container, unquote. Now, written into this bill is that if you violate the provisions, you could be fined either $500 or $1,000. Now, Wohl is part of the Wohl is part of the Alaska House Coalition. And let me take this call. Caller, you are on the line.
Yes. You were talking about the modern-day Coach gun?
Yes. Do you have one?
No, I do not.
Oh.
But my question is, how long are the barrels of the modern-day? Oh,
I don't know. I'd have to check. Or maybe, I don't know if Melissa, if you can check. It's at Sportsman's. They had one listed, a Stoeger. We'll check for you and let you know.
Okay,
yeah, because of the, I don't know that it's 12 inches. It's going to have to be a little longer.
I was kind of curious to see if they were within the legal realms.
And if any cowboy shooters are using them, call in and let us know.
Okay.
Thank you. So I was just saying that Adam Wohl is part of the Alaska House Coalition, and they released a statement, quote, this bill has bipartisan support, as it should, since all are affected when a child dies or injured or is injured by an unsecured firearm, unquote. And here is a quote from Representative Steve Thompson from that Newsminer article.
They're 20 inches.
Okay, so those Coach guns are 20 inches. Thank you, Melissa.
You're welcome.
Okay, so they are lawful or legal.
Yeah, legal.
Okay. All right. So this is a quote from Representative Thompson in that Newsminer article. Representative Wohl and I are both parents of young children, and we care deeply about their safety. House Bill 203 is all about promoting safety, unquote. And Thompson went on to say, quote, this bill is not an infringement of Second Amendment rights, and it's not about taking guns away from anyone. It's about preventing tragic accidents and only gets acted upon if such a tragedy occurs, unquote. Now, the Newsminer writer includes this quote: a safe storage law would allow for police to issue citations if they observe unsecured firearms while in the course of conducting other investigations. The bill does not call for firearms to be seized by authorities. It does not encourage police to look for unsecured firearms in the course of an investigation, unquote. Now, this bill has now been referred to the House State Affairs Committee and the Judiciary Committee. Currently, there are no federal laws requiring any type of safe storage of firearms. Now, the Newsmaker article said there are a dozen states that have types of safe storage rules for gun owners. And I want to read the bill to you word for word, and you're welcome to call in with your comments, pro or con, and share them with all of us. But before I do, I want to make some comments. Whenever I teach a class, I talk about gun storage. That's built into all the classes that we teach. And I always tell students that they must secure their firearms when those firearms are not in use. And I tell them how and where they secure a firearm is a personal decision. And we talk in class about what the term in use means. My gun being in use may mean it's loaded or the ammunition is next to it or I can get to it quickly but not necessarily carried on me when I'm at home. And your definition of in use may be different. And I tell students each of our situations at home is different. Some of us have young children or other persons in and out of our home. Others of us live alone with a spouse or without young children. Some of us do not have people in and out of our homes except occasionally. I also make sure students know it does take three things to come together to have a firearms accident. Those three things are a gun, ammunition, and a person. When students leave a class, they should know how to properly store a gun given their personal circumstances, and they should know how to analyze what in use is for their particular situation. And they also know that to defend themselves in their home, they may or may not have time to access a firearm from a safe, even a small drawer safe or a shelf safe. And trying to unlock a gun with a trigger lock in an emergency situation, especially at night, is going to be a problem. So let me read House Bill 203 as submitted, and I welcome your comments. So this is quoting the bill, Section 3, Alaska Statute 1161, is amended by adding a new section to read, Section 1161-225, Misconduct Involving Weapons in the Sixth Degree. A person commits the offense of misconduct involving weapons in the sixth degree if the person, 1, keeps on a premises a firearm that is not, A, carried by or otherwise under the direct control of the owner or an authorized person, or B, secured in a locked container with a locked gun, with a gun lock, or by other means to render the firearm inaccessible or unable to be used by a person who is not the owner or an authorized person, or 2, knows or reasonably knows that a prohibited person is able to obtain access to a firearm owned or under the control of the person, and the person fails to secure the firearm in a locked container with a gun lock or by other means to render the firearm inaccessible or inaccessible to be used by a person who is not the owner or an authorized person. B, in this section, 1, locked container means a storage device approved or that meets specification established by the Department of Public Safety, and 2, prohibited person means a person who is prohibited from possessing a firearm under 18 U.S.C. 922G or X2 by state law. Misconduct involving weapons in the sixth degree is a violation punishable by a fine of not more than $500 for a violation of A1 of this section, and item 2, $1,000 for a violation of section A2. Section 4 reads, the uncodified law of the state of Alaska is amended by adding a new section to read, applicability, this act applies to offenses committed on or after the effective date of this act, unquote. So while you are processing all that, I'm going to move on to another related topic. I hope that you call in and express your opinion. And if you don't want to do that, think very serious about this. I'll try to follow as it moves through the legislature. Again, you are welcome to call in with your thoughts on this proposed bill, and we're going to take a commercial break.
Sings raggedy music to the cattle as he swings back and forth.
You can now find the legendary KFAR on the FM dial at 97.5.
Fox News, I'm Rich Dennison. A House passed bill to create a bipartisan panel to investigate the January 6th violence at the U.S. Capitol faces strong Republican opposition in the Senate.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says it took Congress more than a year to adopt a 9/11 commission.
What we've said we want is a bipartisan commission.
Pelosi stopped short of saying whether or not she'd consider a congressional panel led by Democrats if the commission legislation fails.
Fox's Jared Halpern on Capitol Hill. A low-pressure system in the mid-Atlantic could develop into a tropical or subtropical cyclone in the next few days ahead of the official June 1st start of the Atlantic hurricane season.
The first Atlantic storm named this year would be Anna. The Pacific saw its first named storm, Andres, develop days before its season began on May 15th.
Fox's Evan Brown. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
An Alaskan man survived 10 seconds of terror after a chance meeting with a large brown bear near Gulkana. Alan Minish was mauled during the brief encounter and is now recuperating at an Anchorage hospital. The bear crushed his right jaw and left him with puncture wounds and lacerations. The bear walked off after the short mauling, and Minish tried to stop the bleeding from his head while waiting nearly an hour for help. The incident happened Tuesday near Gulkana, about 190 miles northeast of Anchorage. Officials say the Alaska Health Department website was the target of a malware attack. It follows a similar attack this month that affected the state's court system. The health department said late Tuesday that its website was taken offline Monday while an investigation was taking place. A statement from the agency did not say when the cyber attack was discovered. The department says it doesn't know who was behind the attack, why the department was targeted, and whether it's related to any other recent cyber attacks. It says investigators are trying to determine if any personal or confidential information has been compromised.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Except for us Alaskans, there's gardens to grow, fish to catch, building projects, adventures, and preparing for next winter. Auto Trim Design can help you with Arctic Spray-On bed liners to protect your bed, mud flaps, floor mats, car stereo, running boards, clear toppers, paint protection film, and much more. Get your auto start installed today to beat the fall rush, and watch our sign for weekly specials. Auto Trim Design, as Bob says,
we'll be here when the other guys are gone.
Avoid unwanted adventures on the road. Before you leave home, wheel bearings to wiring and lights, make sure your trailer is safe with service from Arctic RV. And that goes for your motorhome and camper too. Bodywork to appliances, Arctic RV. So when the mood hits you, whenever that is, your toys are as ready to roll as you are. Book your appointment now. Be ready then. Alaska plays rough, rough it in style. Arctic RV, 30th and Fager, Fairbanks.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today.
We have a caller.
Okay, caller, you are on the line.
Hello, Laura and Melissa. This is Glenn.
Hey, hi, Glenn. How are you?
Oh, just fine. And I'm really glad that you brought up the House Bill 203 for discussion. I think it's something that all of the shooting community here in Fairbanks needs to be aware of and read carefully and make comments. you asked for opinions.
Yes, I want your opinion.
I called to give you my opinion.
Yes. Good. Good.
So, you know, I feel that, and as you mentioned, you know, all good instructors include safe storage as part of their curriculum, and all of us that are responsible firearm owners make sure that our firearms are stored properly, securely, that they're not be able to access by someone that's unauthorized or shouldn't have access to it. So I agree with that, and I think we should continue to do that. However, I feel that the emphasis should remain and be intensified with education.
Yes.
And I don't feel that imposing some type of financial penalty upon an individual after a tragedy has occurred is going to solve anything. Once that tragedy has occurred, you know, the bullet has left the barrel. We can't call it back. And the way to fix that is with education. And unfortunately, a lot of those educational materials and things have been removed from our schools.
Yes.
Due to PC correctness. Yep. And, you know, it would be nice to see some of that brought back to avoid situations like what they're talking about, because with all the new firearm owners out there, you know, it is important to try to continue education and improve education. And in addition to what you mentioned, you know, when I first read that bill, the language that specified when your firearm is not under your direct control, the first thing that came to mind was when you're out at the Cushman shooting range and you leave your firearm on the bench, which is what you know everyone does, and they make sure that it's clear, maybe use a chamber flag, and you walk down range, now that firearm is not under your direct control, and technically now you have just violated the law and could be subject to this fine. So I think this bill, I do think this bill, it has good intentions. I understand what they're trying to do. I'm not opposed to safe and secure storage of firearms. I think we all want that. But I think there's better ways to achieve this. And I think this bill needs a little bit more work, a little bit more thought. And I hope that the shooting community reaches out to these representatives that have sponsored and co-sponsored this bill so that their thoughts and their comments are heard.
Well, I agree with you, and I'll watch this, and we'll watch the progress of it. I agree that if we have an opinion, we need to voice it publicly. You're welcome. You know, anyone's welcome to call the radio station, and let's call our, or better yet, write so there's a record, our representatives, and let them know. It needs to be a community conversation.
Yes, yes. So, and you're right. We need to call, or better yet, write to our representatives. Send them an email. Their emails are out there. Just Google it. Look online. You'll find it. And send them, you know, your correspondence, your thoughts. And if this bill comes up again, you know, for public testimony, call in and provide public testimony on it.
I agree. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Have a great day.
Goodbye.
It's nice and sunny. Bye, Glenn. All right. Before I get started again here, I just want to remind everybody this is May 20th, and in 2 days, May 22nd, is the Friends of NRA Banquet, and I bet you there's some tickets left. So if you're interested, call Troy Stone King at 907-378-6681 or Larry Hannison at 907-699-8431. And if you do go to that, call in next week and tell us if you had a good time. Now, again, in connection with this House Bill 203, often when I read articles like the one about the House bill, I scroll down and read the comments, and that gives me a flavor of the controversy, support, or non-support of what that article is about. And I thought one of the comments about the article was in favor of HB 203 in that the bill might prevent suicides. And then when I went back to reread that comment a few days later, because I wanted to talk about it on the program, I couldn't find that where that person had written in. But the spectra of connecting firearms availability to suicides is something I did want to talk about anyway. And when I spent some weeks ago, a while back, talking about statistics from Guy Smith's book, Guns and Control, I did not cover everything in the book. And one chapter I did not cover was about firearms availability and suicide. But with this House Bill 203 proposed, I am sure that will be one of the arguments for that bill. Now, I know that suicide is a sensitive subject for anyone who has experienced a family member or a friend take their life, no matter what the means. But I think I would be remiss in not talking about the statistics behind firearms availability and suicides, as presented by Guy Smith in his book, Guns and Control. And if I don't finish this today, I'll finish it in 2 weeks after Glenn's program, because I also want to get into the red flag laws, and I don't think we're going to have time for that. In his chapter titled Suicide and Guns, Guy Smith starts out with a story about someone named Paul. And Paul owned a gun, but he was not a gun enthusiast like some of us might be. He was a year out of college and newly married. He was not an abuser of drugs or alcohol, and he did not have a mental health history. He was not involved with activities statistically associated with suicide. Now, Guy Smith explained that Paul had a serious bump in his personal life and decided he could not cope. So to further set the stage, Smith explains that there were 2 days between when Paul got the bad news and when Paul got home to where his gun was. Smith said that Paul was smart and educated. He could have devised any number of ways to end his life during the 2 days it took him to drive home. But in those 2 days, he grappled with the emptiness the bad news had left him with. And to Paul, it was a life-altering event. So it was 2 days before he made his final decision to end his life. And when Paul arrived home, he did just that with a gun. And here is what we need to think about and the question that Smith asks. Did having that gun lead to his suicide? And Smith tells us that question, did the gun lead to a person's suicide, is the question families and friends are left to ask themselves. Caller, you are on the line.
Good morning, Laura. This is Ron.
Hi, Ron.
And I'd like to just quickly address an issue about that Bill 203 you were discussing.
Yes.
The expression mission creep comes to mind.
Yes, absolutely.
And if I'll refer back, and this is not to say that I'm in any way against the use of seatbelts, but initially when Alaska passed its seatbelt law, it was enforced only if it was discovered in the a traffic stoppage for another reason.
Yes.
And that obviously is no longer the case.
Right, you're right.
And so I would submit that something like 203 would be subject to that sort of mission creep over a period of time.
I think you're right. I have thought of that. Actually, I thought about that exact term with this bill. Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. And
okay, just go ahead.
No, I was going to say in another situation I was thinking of is, what if you have multiple guns in your home that you're using for personal protection, and you're in your home and somebody breaks in and you have to defend your life and you have to shoot them, or you don't shoot them. The perpetrator leaves and you call the police. Now you've got one gun that's on you or in your hand, but maybe you have one other in a drawer and another somewhere else that you use for personal protection in your house. Maybe you lock them up when you leave the house. You put them in your safe. But while you're in the house, those guns are there and they're in use. You're using them to protect yourselves. So now, are you going to be fined?
Well, I think we're going to start to get into the judicial realm as far as court decisions.
Yeah, I think we have to pay close attention to this. I appreciate your phone call.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay.
We got
to go to
break.
Oh, we're going to break now. Okay. All right. Well, I will finish this up around the corner.
Yeah,
Except for us Alaskans, there's gardens to grow, fish to catch, building projects, adventures, and preparing for next winter. Auto Trim Design can help you with Arctic Spray-On bed liners to protect your bed, mud flaps, floor mats, car stereo, running boards, clear toppers, paint protection film, and much more. Get your auto start installed today to beat the fall rush, and watch our sign for weekly specials. Auto Trim Design, as Bob says,
we'll be here when the other guys are gone.
Whether you're flying or boating into your favorite fishing hole or just driving to the lake, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for all the fishing gear, licenses, permits, and stamps you'll need. Frontier's extensive fishing department has the conventional, fly, or saltwater tackle for every game fish in Alaska's streams, rivers, lakes, and ocean habitats. Rods and reels, lures and natural bait, lines and nets, dip netting supplies, even sunglasses. Frontier Outfitters has what you need for your successful trip, plus marine parts and equipment downstairs at Century Hardware. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Extend the life of your car or truck. Keep it in top shape with Rogers Auto Repair. Rogers is a complete auto shop. They do it all. Tune-ups to winterizing. Even engine and transmission rebuilds right on the premises. Depend on the people with experience and a sound reputation. They've been helping folks from the same location near the airport on Dale Road since they opened in 1967. Call family-owned and operated Rogers Auto Repair and be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair.
Weather brought to you by the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eyes connect you to your world. Care for them with the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks, your eye health professionals on Mini Street.
KFAR weather.
A blend of clouds and sun today with daytime highs approaching 68. Southeast winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Lows dip down to about 45. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 63. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Currently, it's 58 degrees.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255. 458-TALK, and tell us what's on your mind about firearms today. Glenn and Ron, I appreciate your calls, and I think we had one other caller on before the break who didn't wait, so you are welcome to call back too. And I will continue with firearms availability and the relationship with suicide. So that story I just told you about the gentleman named Paul, Smith lists the takeaways from that story. Quote, this is a quote from his book, first, takeaway. There is nearly no correlation between firearms availability and the rate of successful suicides. Second, firearm suicides rates are largely skewed to older white males in non-metropolitan areas. And third, red flag laws have not been effective in slowing homicides, and improvements in suicide rates appear to be tied to collateral mental health interventions, unquote. And caller, you are on the line.
Hi, Laura. This is Don.
Hi, Don.
How you doing? I just wanted to chime in on HB 203.
Yes.
I think it's, if you look at what the problem that they think they're trying to solve, the purporting to be concerned about child safety.
Yes.
And how the law would be applied, it doesn't do anything to increase the safety of the children if the parent in the home is already an irresponsible gun owner.
Right, absolutely.
Yep. Responsible gun owners already secure their firearms so that they are inaccessible to unauthorized people.
Yep.
So if the person is already irresponsible, I doubt seriously the legislation will do anything to change their behavior.
I agree.
And the law would only be applied after the tragedy has happened. It would do nothing to make children more safe.
If they're
truly concerned about child safety, they would do something towards education.
Yes. Appropriating money to educate people would be great, wouldn't it?
Exactly. If the child knows how to behave safely around firearms, the tragedy wouldn't happen.
Yes.
That would be more effective.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, we teach together. You and I teach together. So we've had some of these discussions. We have wanted to do family classes to educate families. And when you look at it, it's very difficult to do cost effectively because of the cost of the ammunition. Some of us already have the guns, but the cost of the ammunition, the cost of renting the range and facility, you're already up to some pricey event. And what we wanted to do was have volunteer instructors and only charge maybe the cost of the book to a family of three or a family of four, and the whole family come together and learn about gun safety. So that's something that I still want to do in the future. But Don, you're right. Appropriating something to have a program like that will do a lot more good than what this House bill is doing.
Exactly. Punitive measures like this really don't deter the behavior they're claiming to try to correct.
Yeah.
They've proven that at multiple levels of different aspects of the corrections, the penal systems, correction systems. You know, the death penalty doesn't keep people from committing murder.
Exactly.
It just doesn't work. Education goes much farther towards their end. And I have to say, I think this is mainly more a feel-good political posturing type of a move, and I don't really think they thought it out very much. It sounds good. Everybody wants to protect children, but are you really doing something that's going to protect children?
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Well, so, we'll have more conversations about this as it moves through.
We definitely will. I'll let you go. Thanks a lot, Laura. Great show.
Thank you, Don.
We have another caller.
Okay, caller, you are on the line.
Yes, one more concern about this Bill 203.
Yes.
Their definition of locked container means a storage device approved or that meets specification established by the Department of Public Safety.
Right.
All it takes is their determination that my 1,200-pound safe isn't as secure as this 1,500-pound safe, and it's no longer approved.
Yeah,
that can change over and over.
Oh, it can. And I think that, you know, I did experiments. So way back when I took Joe Nava's class, I did some experiments after he told us some of this information. And I had somebody pretend like they were breaking in the front door, just come in through the front door. And I was in the bedroom, and the gun was in a lock box in the bedroom in the nightstand. And, of course, I knew the person was, they weren't breaking down a door. They were just going to come in. But I didn't know when they were going to come in. So when they came in, when they started to come in that door, I went for my gun. It didn't take, that person was 6'5". It didn't take him but a few seconds to get into that door and down the hallway. I was still messing around getting my gun out of the box. I mean, so this is what happens when you're trying to use your gun to defend yourself. I understand what you're saying, and that's a big if. And if this bill went forward, I would want to see how that was defined, how the Department of Public Safety defined what those guns had to be in.
That's not important because they can always change it six months later.
Yes, they can. You are right. You are right, and I'm wrong. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's true. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's see. We've got 10 minutes left here, and I'll continue with guns availability and suicide, and if you want to make comments about House Bill 203, please call in because it's important. So Smith tells us that, quote, in the United States, suicide by firearm is the most common mode, comprising about 50% of all suicides, unquote. Suffocation is the second most common, accounting for about 23% of incidences. But beware of how gun control persons might use statistics. Smith tells us that when gun control types put out that X amount of Americans have died from gun violence during a period of time, criminologists know that a percentage of that total number was suicide. And I would ask, is it ethical to provide numbers that include suicide numbers added in with gun violence numbers? Well, only if you want to inflate the numbers of gun violence to sway an audience. And Smith says it does not make rational sense to include suicide numbers within gun violence numbers. Now, here's a quote from his book. Measuring the correlation between gun availability and suicide rates across American states is a bit of a folly, unquote. He tells us there are no precise statistics on average rate of gun ownership by state. We don't know that number. And the number of average rate of gun ownership by state would be half the equation. If you don't know the average rate of gun ownership, how can you calculate the effect of gun ownership or gun availability on suicide rates? We have no way to know if a suicide is committed because a gun was available, and if that suicide would not have been committed if a gun was not available. And I'll get to why that is in a few minutes. And further, Smith writes, quote, in fact, Some criminologists believe that the best proxy for gun ownership rates are state-by-state suicide rates. And this leads to a chicken-and-egg circular analysis, whereby using a population measurement cannot also be used as an effect measurement. It would be akin to measuring the probability of being in an automobile accident by restricting the study population to just car owners, unquote. That was from his book. Now, I read we can find meaningful correlations if we use international comparison numbers. And Smith points out the Small Arms Survey, it's called SAS, and you can find the Small Arms Survey webpage with a Google search or key in smallarmssurvey.org. The SAS is a respected research project, and it's located at the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies in Geneva, Switzerland. It looks at the number of international small arms and armed violence issues on an international scope, and it collects and analyzes the data. Now, Smith points out also that WHO, the World Health Organization, which is an offspring of the United Nations, also collects data. We need to understand guns and other methods of suicide. So here is a quote from Smith. It's easy to work to contrast gun availability data by country from the Small Arms Survey with suicide data from the World Health Organization. And he says the correlation between private gun ownership and successful suicides, in his word, is nearly non-existent. Now, from looking at a chart in his book, the United States has the highest rate of private gun ownership on an international basis, but only a slightly above average percentage of the population that commits suicide. For the United States, the percentage of the population that commits suicide is 11.1 people for 100,000 people. On an international basis, the average per 100,000 is 10 people, so 11.1 to 10. So let's think about this. In the United States, with the highest rate of gun ownership in the world, if guns drive the rate of suicide, the rate per 100,000 would be much higher. And what's interesting to me from this chart is that the country with the highest rate of suicide of all countries listed, and not all the countries in the world are listed, but on his chart, it's Lithuania. But Lithuania has one of the absolute lowest rates of gun ownership. In Lithuania, hanging oneself is the highest percentage of suicide methods. So we're going to talk again about this in a minute, or it may wait for a couple of weeks. Now, weeks ago when we talked about statistics, we talked about the term substitution of means. And we can accomplish a task with more than one means, and humans can do this with suicide. Smith's example is that if you need to make fast money, you could get a part-time job, get a loan, or rob a bank. Same goal, different means, you choose the means. And I don't mean to make light of suicide. I'm explaining what Guy Smith writes. Guy Smith has a dry sense of humor, even about serious and sensitive subjects. Now, one issue we have to discuss is culture, the culture we grew up in or live in, because this has influence on suicide. And Smith tells us most people commit suicide from stress and depression, but medical conditions, especially as people age, are another reason why they commit suicide. And he reminds us that different world cultures have different norms for how a person might handle a personal situation. And many of those cultures are represented in our own country, so that has to be considered. And I'm going to stop here and pick this up, not next week because Glenn will be here, but the week after. I think it's important, and I want to get to the red flag laws and their effect on suicide, because like I said, I know all this is going to come up with this House Bill 203. I want to leave you all with the safety rules. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot. Always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. And thank you for all the calls on House Bill 203, and we'll continue that discussion over the next weeks.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
From the American Tire and Auto Studio. If you need to know, you need KFAR 97.5 FM and 660 AM, Fairbanks, Alaska.
This is a